Hello and welcome back to Let's Grow Girls, your favourite cut flower podcast.
Welcome back everyone. This week we are joined by Rachel from Green and Gorgeous. Rachel, if you don't follow her on Instagram, I don't know what you're doing, so get over there first of all. But Rachel has worked in horticulture for over 25 years and she has experience in design, landscaping, nursery work and productive horticulture. That's quite a list, Rachel. And in 2008 is when you founded Green and Gorgeous, your beautiful flower farm and floral design studio in Oxfordshire. Did I get all of
you
that
did.
Right, Rachel?
Well done, and thank you for having me on your podcast.
No, thank you for joining us today. We're very excited to talk to you about your new book, which is your second book. Back in 2017, you did more of a floristry book called The Flower Book, but your most recent one is the one we're really excited to hear about. I think Sarah in particular, because she loves a perennial.
I do.
And is called The Cut Flower Source Book, Exceptional Perennials and Woody Plants for Cutting. I mean, it's like music to our ears because I feel like perennials has to be the way forward, right?
Definitely. Yeah. It was 2 years in the making, so I was thinking about this book probably in 2018 when I really started to turn the farm, which is 5 acres, over to mainly perennials and woody plants. And when I say woody plants, I mean shrubs, trees, climbers, roses, you know, anything like that. So yeah, I guess that's when I started thinking about it. And I think a lot of other people have been growers, gardeners who like to grow cut flowers, have been moving in the same direction.
I mean, I feel like there's always a place for annuals, right? We don't want to be without a cosmos in the summer. You know, we love the tulips, which I know most flower growers treat as annuals these days. But I just feel like the less ongoing work with a perennial, if that's not a reason to sell it to somebody. I mean, obviously they're beautiful and we're going to talk about some of your favourites and stuff as we go on in the episode. But do you think that's like one of the reasons you focused on that as a book? Because it's a less labour-intensive...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not getting any younger. It's our 15th year of Green and Gorgeous. And yes, there certainly is a place for annuals. They are a very important group of plants. Bring so much volume of flower and beauty. But their season is quite short in comparison to perennials and woody plants. And if you need to, you know, start selling your flowers in March and go on through till November to make it a viable business, then you do need plants that extend the season for you. So that's one reason. And also, yeah, because I'm running out of steam a little bit and I just need things that are less work, which, you know, they certainly are. Less stress. They are far more weather tolerant and dependable than annuals. And with climate change, you know, that has really sharpened my focus on these plant groups. And I think a lot of us are feeling that and need to look for things that can cope with our more extreme weather conditions.
And Rachel, I feel like in my excitement for perennials, I just launched straight into them. But we'd love to hear a little bit more about you before we go into the full perennial chat and how you got into all of this. I know you just mentioned 15 years of Green and Gorgeous, but do you want to give us a little bit of a background about you and how you got into this world?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I actually started, I've been in horticulture for nearly 30 years now, and I actually started in garden design. I did a 2-year course at Pershore College with Chris Beardshaw, who is an amazing teacher, before he sort of got into television and became a Chelsea Flower Show winner. So that's really, you know, my sort of love for perennials started then as a designer. And I did that for a few years. I actually worked for the NHS designing hospital gardens. That was really my focus.
Oh,
yeah, it really
amazing.
Was. It was quite challenging. I think my first garden I ever designed was a roof garden for the maternity ward. And yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that actually survived was the euphorbia. So it was, you know, a steep...
I was about to say, that's an interesting climate.
I must admit, I didn't have enough experience to really understand the weather conditions.
Make it till you make it.
But anyway, you know, I learned as I went along and loved it, did it for a good few years. But then I kind of decided I wanted to get into productive horticulture. I wanted to grow things that were useful. Of course, you know, therapy gardens in a hospital are useful, but in truth, the funding from the NHS ran out, which is no surprise. So yeah, I decided to move on and go into productive horticulture, and I wanted to grow things to eat. really was my focus. And I got a job in a beautiful walled garden on a country estate in the Cotswolds, private estate. With this incredible tied cottage next to the walled garden. And my brief was to grow vegetables, fruits, and cut flowers for the big house. And that was my full-time job for 6 years. And in that time, I just fell madly in love with growing cut flowers and was given a limitless budget and complete free rein to experiment and grow whatever I liked. So it was...
literally living the dream.
I was living the dream. It was an organic 500 acre organic estate of such supreme beauty that, yeah, a very special place. And yeah, I really just taught myself how to grow cut flowers. There was very little, this was back in 2002, and there really was very little information out there. There was no social media, no Flowers from the Farm, no books apart from Sarah Raven's The Cutting Garden, the first book she wrote, which I still think is one of the best books on the subject. And I still refer to it to this day. So, yeah, I just let my imagination run wild, really.
Oh, that's amazing. And were you from that area of
the
world?
No, I wasn't. I was actually living in America when I got that job. I applied for it from Horticultural Weeks and came back to take the job. I would have stayed. I'd probably still be there now. But sadly, the owners of the estate decided to sell. And so it really, you know, I'd been thinking for a long time whilst I was there in the walled garden. Why is it that we don't have these kind of flowers for the wider public? Why are they just for the elite? Why are we not having these at farmers markets? Mm. You never saw anything like that. At a farmers market, at a florist shop, there were no British flowers, barely any British flowers. People were completely unaware of where their flowers came from. You know, if you said English country garden style, that just wasn't heard of then. I know it's weird now because we all talk about that, don't we? And, you know, 15 years on, it's we're so much more aware. I thought, no, I think I could make a business out of this. And so I found some land for rent. That's where I went after I got made redundant from my job and took on a field, which was an existing organic market garden. So it did have a polytunnel, it had irrigation. So there was some kind of infrastructure which helped. And there was an existing client base, even though they were used to buying vegetables, not flowers. So some of them were disgruntled and some of them were very happy. and that's...
I like that. No more salad for you. You will have dahlias.
Yeah, that's where I started, really. How it started, Green and Gorgeous, yeah.
And the rest is history. Are you still on that same piece of land?
We're still on the same piece of land. And, you know, we've expanded from that initial... I was probably growing on about half an acre. And actually, the first plants I put in were perennials because I knew those plants more than annuals, I suppose. And then we've gone from half an acre up to 5 acres over that 15-year period. So I think that's quite good to hear that it doesn't happen overnight. Mm. It's a slow grow, which is right, you know, for this business, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think to take on such a huge space would just be, I mean, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but would be like quite overwhelming to know where to get started. And expensive,
very,
right?
Very, you know? Yeah. Risky.
I just feel like I would work on half an acre and just spend my life mowing grass for the rest of it.
Yeah, no, because I didn't really have any customers apart from the disgruntled vegetable customers. I didn't really know how I was going to sell these flowers. I started with farmers markets and I was the only person selling flowers. Literally anywhere I went, I could go anywhere and there wouldn't be anyone else, so that was quite good. And so I gradually obtained customers and then gradually started to do weddings, but it, you know, it was a slow build. And so it was quite nice because the growing and the selling, they grew together in quite an organic way, which was manageable. As I got bigger, obviously I took on staff, help, and just did it that way. So there were stressful times where I certainly did feel overwhelmed, you know, it was manageable. Just
And then before we start interrogating you on the knowledge you have about perennials, can you tell us about like the process of writing the book?
Well, I started really getting serious about it in lockdown because, I mean, we all had a lot of time to think, oh yeah, I could do this. And it was actually...
Who didn't make sourdough bread in lockdown, right? We all thought we were capable of crazy chefing. So why not a book too, eh?
I really felt I really wanted to write on this topic. I had a very strong feeling that this topic was important. And I'd heard of Anna Mumford, the publisher of Filbert Press, and I'd actually seen her doing a tea time talk on Garden Masterclass. I don't know if you know those guys. And I was really impressed with her, and I really like the books that she's published. I really think they're good content-rich books, gardening books. And so I just approached her with what's called a glimmer, which is the proposal. And then we worked on that proposal for a few months. And then I started writing it in, I think it was in March 2021. 2 years of writing and photographing to capture everything through the seasons. And it's got 128 plants in a directory. We needed photographs of all of those as well. So it was a lot of work.
And you worked with a very well-known photographer, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I actually insisted on having Eva Nemeth.
I mean, I think I would too. It's like, she's top of the list for the
photography, isn't she? And, you know, amazing. I actually met Eva back in 2016. We were put together to do a series for House and Gardens on cut flower growing. And that's when I was introduced to her. And she actually only lives about 15 minutes away. So we became
perfect.
I know.
Perfect for those. Oh my God, the flowers are in bloom. Get here now, phone calls.
Yes, we became friends when we were doing that, because that was a year project. We've worked together on various things since. So it was an obvious, could be no one else. Really. I had to photograph the plant directory. That was my job. And Eva is an amazing teacher. So, you know, she taught me a lot about how to actually really capture the plants as well, which was really great.
Well, that sounds like a match made in heaven, the two of you, for that book. I cannot wait to see the pictures in it.
Yeah.
So on to the main topic. So we spoke a little bit earlier when I was getting carried away about why you chose perennials for the topic of your book. And do you have anything to add to why it was such a key subject for you to cover?
I think, like I said, I mean, the main thing for me is that they're more reliable than annuals. Obviously, for me, I have to have flowers every single week from April through to November. I do a lot of weddings. My diary is fully booked, and so I cannot have too many crop failures. I mean, we all get crop failures, don't we? But I find with perennials, I get less. Certainly the past 3 or 4 years due to climate change. So that's number one. I think another really important point to make is that perennials for me are more exciting. I think they create more of a distinctive look in my floristry. As you develop your signature style, which obviously takes, for me, it's taken a few years to really know what my style is. We don't know when we first start, do we? There's so much range compared to annuals that we can all choose different things depending on our growing conditions, depending on what suits our style, and we can all have a distinctive look with materials that you could never buy in a shop that florists would, you'll be the envy of, basically, to have the sort of kinky stems. And I mean, it's just, yeah, I'm just looking behind me at that arrangement I've got there. You know, that's got like a little tulip Turkestana, I think it's called Turkestana in it. It's got some incredible spirea, a really early one called Thunbergii, which a lot of people don't know. Baby's breath spirea, it's called. It just is things like that, the delicacy of it, the seasonality of perennials. They so are of their moment. You know, you can't mess about with their seasons like you can with annuals a little bit. You can manipulate, but
they just
speak of the moment, and they extend the seasons, and they bridge gaps in the seasons. So when we have the sort of May, what I call the May sort of hungry gap in flowers, it's perennials and flowering shrubs that for me mean I can continue seamlessly through to when the annuals really get going in June. So they're very important for that as well.
And do you know what I like about them? This might sound a little bit like a bit romantic and airy, but I kind of feel like it's like foraging, but off your own land. And that's what I did when I sort of first started arranging. I was very careful with my foraging, by the way, if anyone's listening. I was not ransacking the local woodland, but you know, those, like you say, those kinky branches that aren't perfect, and those, you know, more unusual things that you walk past and you think, like, what is that? You do a bit of research on what's out there, what grows nicely where you live. Like, I'd never heard of the word cotton Easter as a plant or a tree, I'm not sure what it's actually defined as, until I went, you know, wandering around my local area and I found these like unusual peak coloured berries growing off something. I thought, this is incredible, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a journey of discovery into these plant groups. You know, they definitely evoke more of a natural style, which is what we're all trying to do, isn't it? Yeah, that looks perhaps for foraged, more so than annuals. Now, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not dissing annuals. I still grow a lot of annuals and I love them. And I think it's nice to have a mix, but I think it's sensible, especially, I know I keep going back to business, but if you're trying to make a living out of this, to go with the backbone of these shrubs and perennials and then have those really lovely splashes of annuals in there as well.
And like you say, it takes you right through to the end of the year, doesn't it? I've got a lady who lives near me with Flower Farm that she's converted, I think, a third of it now into just growing perennials. And the trade she does at Christmas is insane. You know, she's selling, you know, all of the woody shrubs for wreaths and Christmassy arrangements. I couldn't believe it. And I just thought, wow, now this is the way to keep your business going outside of summer.
Well, it is, isn't it? Because just think, if you just relied on annuals, and we'll include tulips in that. Outdoors, my tulips are literally about 2 inches high right now. I mean, I wouldn't be able to actually get going until, mid-April, perhaps. And I'd certainly be finishing, I mean, here we're very cold, I'd probably be finishing beginning of October. And that's quite a short season. If that's all your money, your only way of making a living, then that's going to be a tough one, isn't it, for the winter months, if you didn't have those woody cuts. And perennials that you can dry, you know, so many perennials are fantastic for drying, which could be used then, seed heads, grasses, can be used through the winter as well.
And then I think you mentioned there's 128 varieties in the book. How did you narrow it down to those 128? What was the process?
Well, I did want to include more, but we ran out of pages.
It was only one book for now, right?
Volume 2 incoming.
It did get bigger than it was meant to originally be. So that's 128 genus, but then within that, there's quite a few recommended species and cultivars. So it does actually expand it quite a lot beyond 128, which is handy.
That's a clever way of getting around the number. I like it.
Because, you know, if you find a plant, a genus, like, say, Lysimachia, that likes your growing conditions, then of course you're going to want to explore within that the species and cultivars, expand it out. Geums, that's another really good example. There's loads, right? But yeah, I suppose what really narrowed it down to that number was they're all things I grow here. So they had to be things that were tried and tested, not just in growing in the field, being tough, trustworthy, but also worked really well as a cut material that would look amazing in an arrangement, holds in the vase. You know, for each one, I do kind of explain why I've chosen it. What are its cut flower attributes? Why has it made the cut? Because I could literally include hundreds. But I think it's important that people just use this as a springboard. It's not a definitive, you know, list. It's just to get people started. They're going to have different growing conditions to me. I mean, this book is around the world. It's not just in this country. And it's just to get them thinking along the right lines of what they need to look at to choose that plant in the first place. What makes it a good cut flower or a good foliage for arranging.
And in your experience with the perennials, I think one of the things that can possibly make them a bit daunting for people is the financial investment in them. I mean, obviously, if it's for a business perspective, you've got to sometimes invest up front to get that longevity of your product. But do you think there are ways of doing it less expensively? I mean, did you grow from seed or did you look for smaller plants? Propagation? Like, how did you build up that?
Yeah, I mean, I, as you know, am a big fan of seeds. That's another one of our sidelines. And, you know, so many perennials are very easy to grow from seed. First year flowering perennials that if you sowed them, well, most times I sow mine in February and I use a bit of bottom heat and then I do have a grow light. If I do that, I can have them flowering by July quite happily. An abundance of flower, just as much as an annual. You know, people often think, oh, perennials don't give you as many cuts, but the first year flowering perennials do.
Well, like what would you put in that first year flowering category?
I mean, Achillea is always the obvious one, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Catenache, also known as Cupid's dart, that's another one. Cellini, Vladicampion, which everyone should grow.
beautiful.
Just brilliant, that is. I mean, I've got in the book, I've got quite a long list of those. I also do grow many other perennials from seed that don't actually start flowering to the second year, but they're longer living perennials. The thing is with first year flowering perennials, Scabious is another one, they tend to only give you about 3 years and then they slowly fade away. So you do have to keep sowing those. It's a sort of 3 year cycle. Mm. Things like, let's say, peonies or hellebores. Yes, they are more expensive. They are an investment, but they last, well, probably a lifetime. If you look after them properly, they will last your lifetime. So, and you can lift and divide. You know, once you've got a perennial, there's many ways to propagate it. Just before I came in to chat to you guys, I was doing basal cuttings, some of my favourites out there, which I want to bulk up. So often I will go to rare plant fairs or specialist nurseries where things are quite expensive. You're not going to buy 20 plants. You're going to buy one or two. You're going to take them home. You're going to try them out, see if they like your garden, see if you like arranging with them. Then you're going to propagate from them by cuttings, by saving seed off them, by division. I recommend getting, and in my book, I do recommend a couple of books in the back that are really good books on how to propagate perennials so that you can actually look up, you know, oh, I've got a Sanguisorba. How do I love this one. How am I going to get more of it? So you can look that up and then have a go.
I'm glad that you mentioned peonies because I think like when you talk about perennials, like my head goes to viburnum, eucalyptus, like a tree more like, but they're actually, there's so many other plants that fall into the perennial.
Yeah, I mean, that's more woody plants, isn't it? The viburnums, they're the shrubs. Perennials, yeah, herbaceous perennials, that's the main body of the plants that I'm talking about. The hardy, herbaceous ones that die back and then come up, even through a really cold winter like we've just had, up they come. They look fantastic, actually. The peonies love a really, really cold winter. They're happy as anything.
Yeah, I heard that. Somebody told me the other day that they live in Queensland in Australia and they were like, oh, we're so jealous we can't have peonies. And I thought, well, I thought they'd love your summer, but they don't have the winter for that cold for them to come up. But it suits us, doesn't it? Because we tend to have a good cold spell, don't we?
They've done well. You know, and if you buy them in bare root, they're not actually too expensive. You know, we do a lot of these group buy-ins with Flowers for the Farm members. That's a good way of getting things like that more cheaply.
I need more peonies because it's very cold up north. I think I really could have just a family of them.
Could.
What a life it is up here. It's freezing.
And, you know, and they're really, peonies, they're not fussy. You got to wait 3 years. I don't mind that. I'm quite patient. You wait 3 years.
Got to invest the time.
Yeah, and then you can start picking them, but not too heavily, only half from each plant. Otherwise, you will exhaust them. But apart from that, they really need nothing. You know, as long as they've got full sun, good soil, and no neighbours, they're happy.
It was admittedly one of the first things I did. I'm quite a newbie grower. I only really started growing during lockdown. And I think one of the first things I did once I vaguely understood what was going on was bought peonies because I was like, right, well, if I buy them right now, in 3 years when I actually know what's going on.
I love that you say that you bought them, Sarah. What she actually did was, this was back when you were living in a communal area, you had some properties near you that were vacant and somebody liberated some peonies, didn't they?
And I bought some, to be fair.
They were so sad there by themselves. Nobody to love them. Yeah. They needed liberating.
They were behind an empty sort of army house and they don't maintain those gardens when they're empty. So in the summer, they would get overgrown with like nettles and weeds so they wouldn't get the sunshine they needed. So I did them a favour and rehomed a few of them. And they're very happy with me. But yeah, I think that was one of my proudest achievements, was being able to see that I needed to buy my peonies ASAP. Because that was now 2 years ago, so I'm actually getting
you are.
Time is
it's
on
so
my
exciting
side.
When you can finally pick some, isn't it?
I know, wouldn't that
I've
be
got one me? Coming up to its 3 years now. I've got two, and I'm like, oh my god, come on, I cannot wait to see. I've let on the younger ones, I admittedly have let one flower bloom just so I could see what it was, just to make sure I hadn't bought.
Don't think there's nothing wrong with letting them bloom. I mean, well, I did that as well. But I deadheaded them as soon as they flowered, flowers came off. I know some people are very disciplined and just take the buds off, but I don't think it does them too much harm to let them bloom just a little bit.
I deadheaded them maybe with about 4 inches just so I can a little bed bars. But yes, they made me happy, so it's not just
that's
about that,
right, gosh, yeah, gotta enjoy it.
Gotta be enjoyed. We wanted to chat a bit about like extending the season, so we wondered if you could pick sort of a few key perennials that you'd recommend to provide flowers sort of before the main spring season starts. Are there any key players that you rely on?
Well, I suppose it's got to be hellebores at this time of year. Hellebores, but you do need to wait until the stamens have dropped, the seed pods are swelling. Otherwise, they're just not going to pick. They're not going to hold. So I'm just starting to pick those, and they're looking fabulous. They've still got quite a good rich colour to them. The other thing I love to pick, which I was probably picking a couple of weeks ago, was cherry plum blossom, which is favourite blossoming branch. It holds for ages, 2 weeks in the vase, so delicate. Yeah, that would be a good one for extending the season. And then in the other direction into autumn, I'm going for berried branches, things like snowberries. We grow, oh gosh, we've got about 8 different varieties of snowberry, almost 100 metre row. I do quite like a bit of snowberry.
Oh, wow.
I like it not just for its berries. I like to go for, particularly with shrubs, that have more than one stage of harvest. So the reason I grow so much is that half of that will get cut for foliage. It has the most exquisite foliage that people often overlook because they're just thinking about the berries. But if you look at the foliage, it's a beautiful bluish green and it almost has a ferny look to it. So it's really nice to use in summer bouquets because it's not too heavy. Often I find with foliage in the summer months, it can be a little bit too dominant with the flowers and I don't want that. I like quite a meadowy, delicate look. So I always am looking for fine foliage. This is what I mean about knowing your style. Once you know exactly what your look is, you can find the plant that fits into that gap, which is why you end up getting to 5 acres of plants.
And 100 metre row of snowberries.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy to look after as well. All you do is take a hedge cutter to it in February. Just go down the row, trim the whole lot back, chuck a bit of compost on the top, and that's it. Job done for the whole season. And then all you have to do is pick it.
Wow.
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds of stems. You know, it's very fast growing.
Because I guess there's a lot of rubs and things like that people would think of as a one and done, but they're obviously not thinking about the foliage. And then there are others that really are a one and done, right? The one I always think about, which I love, but I often think it's because I love it so much, there's no way it's a waste of space, but a lilac.
Yes, no, you're right. It's just a 2 week flower and then it's not really useful for anything else, is it? So that one.
But they smell so good.
Well, I just planted some lilac 2 days ago, but I went for the smaller flowered type that is a bit longer in flower.
Is that the Korean lilac?
No, what's it called? This one was called Red Pixie. I'd have to look at the species name.
Oh.
But it's much finer flowered and it tends to flower slightly later. But yes, okay. I mean, it's no, lilac is lovely and it does come at quite a useful time when the May gap, which I was talking about.
But it's quite a space eater, isn't it? If you're only getting something for 2 weeks. But again, like with the peonies, that's such a short season, but they are, I think you've got to weigh up, haven't you, with like how amazing something is versus how long it's going to be around for.
I mean, I always use the word useful, which is a bit boring, isn't it, really? But peonies are the gap, they fill the focal flower gap between your spring bulbs, your tulips, for example, and your roses, if you grow roses. So they are an essential focal flower for May.
And if you get it right, you could have a 2 month season of them almost, couldn't you? If you've got the right varieties and you play around with them, you could have, it's not just 2 weeks
I think
and
you
done,
could,
is it?
I think that's a stretch. I think you could have 4 to 6 weeks. It depends on the season.
Okay.
If it gets really hot, obviously it's going to be shorter. Last year, I did manage to get 6 weeks between my earliest ones.
Oh, wow,
if you
brilliant.
Want really early, you need to go for the peony hybrids. Look for peony hybrids. So they tend to be single or semi-double types, like Coral Charm is a good example, one that everyone knows. Double frou-frou types are later flowering. By going for those two different herbaceous perennials, you do extend the season.
Okay, and obviously, so we have our side episode where we will grill you on some more of your favourites. But if there was one perennial that you just could not live without,
God.
Like the first one that flashes to your mind as I say that, what do you think it would be?
Oh, whoa. Well, I'm probably going to be a bit controversial and say dahlias because, you know, they are a tender perennial. They are a perennial.
Yeah.
And actually,
speaking my language,
I leave mine in. Now, I know, again, not everyone can do that. It depends on your soil. If you're on a heavy clay, people are probably listening going, oh, come on. We are on a loam, a silty loam, lucky us. Saying that, though, we are right next to the River Thames, and it's flooded many times, and we are incredibly cold. We got down to minus 12 this winter, and they're still there. They're still there. So the reason I leave them in, one, I grow so many, I literally haven't got the energy to take them out, especially by November. I just can't be bothered. Oh, I'm done.
By then.
So with a good mulch, I leave them in, mulch them. They do 3 years for me. They come back a month earlier if you leave them in. If you take them out, you're not going to get them flowering properly until mid-August. Leave them in, they start flowering mid-July. So again, it's closing a gap for me in my focal flowers because my roses will have finished. And if I don't have my dahlias in, I'll have literally 2 or 3 weeks, which are really tricky when I don't have focal flowers, and doing weddings, that's just like not an option. Who cannot love a dahlia? I mean, for a cut flower grower.
You are talking my language yeah. here, Rachel. Dahlias are the way to my heart.
They are. And they, you know, when I started growing flowers, even before I had any inkling that I was going to become a flower farmer, they were the first flowers I grew and cut. And that was when they were deeply, deeply unfashionable back in the 90s. And I was wearing them in my hair. So there we go. I've always loved them.
A trendsetter.
You were a trendsetter.
Yeah. Were they orange by any chance?
No, I had this giant, because it was all the giant decoratives then. It was your sort of grandfather's allotment.
Of course.
It was a giant decorative, deep, dark maroon. I mean, obviously I had long hair then.
Oh, I can imagine it.
So it looked pretty dramatic.
Do you have one of those dahlia hats that people have now? There's like a hat maker, isn't there? He makes hats that look like giant dahlias.
I have that one. And it's from the woman who makes them is the sister of somebody who was a maid in Chelsea. And she makes as a Royal Trader now.
I didn't know about this.
Yes, you have to have a little investigate there, Rachel. You could
be the dahlias. Yeah, I might go back to it. I might do it for the... we're having an open day. So I might have to do one for that, I think.
I thought you were going to ask for photographic evidence there, Sarah.
No, I would never.
So, I think we're coming towards the end of the episode now. Sarah's favourite question.
This is someone we ask everyone who comes on the show. But if you could give the people listening one piece of advice for the coming year, and it doesn't have to be perennials related, what would it be?
Oh, gosh.
It's the toughest question, isn't it?
Well, it's probably going to be something quite boring. Make sure.
Oh, we love that.
If you're growing cut flowers, you need water. And there's no point, you can't.
Oh,
I'm just sorry. Maybe in Northern Ireland, it's not, you know, quite such a worry. But generally, speaking, you need irrigation. If you're going to grow cut flowers, you're not going to get enough stem length unless they're well watered. These days, we cannot rely on a lot of rain. And so my top tip is get some irrigation down. We use trickle tape, tea tape. Mm-hmm. It's quite cheap, affordable. It's pointless, especially with annuals, trying to grow them without, I guess that's a bit harsh, isn't it?
That's great. I like that. Sometimes you need the honest truth.
I love a practical tip. Sometimes people are like, think out of the box. Think about, you know, this or that. And I'm like, I love that. But I think as somebody who has been hauling water to my polytunnel, because my allotment switches off the water in the winter. And I messaged on our WhatsApp group this week and I said, is the water back on yet? Because it doesn't normally come on until the 31st of March. And they've turned it on a whole week early. And I was like, I'm so excited to go down there tonight. I might even just like hose myself because there's water there.
That's it. I mean, I think it can just be all that work that you put in, and it is very labour intensive growing cut flowers. It could just all be ruined because you did not consider your irrigation, and I just think that would be a terrible shame. So it's something to get sorted out sooner rather than later, because if we get a heat wave and a dry spell, that could be some very short bud vase arrangements that you're going to be looking at.
Those bridal bouquets just turned into little posies.
Okay, so if people listening want more of your perennial and other expertise, so your book, where is your book available?
I assume everywhere. Amazon?
everywhere, even your own websites.
Firstly, you should buy from me directly. But if that's not for some reason an option, all online booksellers have it. Bookshops, your local bookshop should have it. I mean, it's being very well circulated.
And the added bonus of buying it from your website, Rachel, is
I sign it, and you also get 3 packets of my lovely perennial seed to get you started.
That's definitely the reason get it from your site. And your website is greenandgorgeousflowers.co.uk, is that right? Yeah. And also on your website, the people want more. You've got your seeds on there. I mean, I know your seed sales are at different times, but you also sell things like the ranunculus corms, sweet pea seeds, all of that good stuff.
Yes, we do. We are selling seeds like there's no tomorrow at the moment. They're still going strong, so we just keep on going with that. Ranunculus claws will probably be around September, October time. I might possibly be doing chrysanthemum cuttings as well this year.
Rachel, I've got some lovely varieties
and they feature in the book, you know, because again, they are a perennial, so they made the cut, and a very important group of plants they are too.
And if that wasn't enough, you've also got courses on the website.
I do, yes. We put up another flower farming one yesterday for the autumn, and we are putting up a dahlia one as well for September, a full day of growing and arranging dahlias.
So the
a full day
for dahlias, yeah, the dahlias.
The courses are a bit of growing, a bit of floristry, and you've also got the photography ones, haven't you? I've had my BDI on the
Evers.
Yes, and I was just too late. You're fully booked.
Well,
on that one.
Yeah, but we may well run another date with Eva because that's been so popular. So we may well do another one in the autumn.
Okay, and my eyes are peeled for that one. I'll crack the SLR, DSLR storage for it.
She's an excellent teacher, and she does also do a little bit about the Lightroom editing, which is another important part of the photography, I think. So she touches on that as well.
Oh, well, thank you ever so much for joining us today, Rachel. We know the book is going to be a massive success, and I personally can't wait to get my hands on it.
Well, thank you. Now, I actually today found out that it's number one on the bestseller on the gardening books top 50.
Woo-hoo!
Number
that
one.
Applause. That's
pretty
amazing.
Good.
Congratulations.
I can't believe it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. You must be pleased as punch with that.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you for having me. It's been really nice.
Thank you for coming on.
It's outro time.
Thank you so much for listening and for your support. We are loving this season so far.
And we hope you are too. If you love the episode as much as we love doing it, then we would be so grateful if you left us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also subscribe, and you can find us on Instagram for more of our adventures at Let's Grow Girls Podcast.
We're really grateful having you here, listening to all of our interviews with our amazing guests. And we hope that you carry on enjoying the rest of the season.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye. You sounded really far away when you said that. Were you sat back?
Yeah, because I didn't want to shout at our people, you know.